This is Audible.
Simon & Schuster Audio presents The Unwanteds by Lisa McMahon. Read by Simon Jones.
The Purge. There was a hint of wind coming over the top of the stone walls and through the barbed wire sky on the day Alexander Stowe was to be purged. Alex waited in the dusty commons of Quill and felt the light breeze cooling the sweat on his upper lip. His twin brother Aaron stood beside him, their parents behind. And all around, the entire community of Quill watched and waited, the bland looks of sleeping fish on their faces. Mr. Stowe pressed his finger hard into Alex's back. A final poke in the kidneys, a last goodbye, Alex thought. Or a warning not to run. Alex glanced at Aaron, whose face showed the tiniest emotion. Scared, was it? Or sad? Alex didn't know. The High Priest, Justine, her long white hair undisturbed despite the breeze, rose to her full height and observed the silent crowd. She began without introduction or ado, for a purge was neither exciting nor boring. It just was, as many things just were in Quill. There were nearly 50 13-year-olds this year. The people of Quill waited to hear which of these teenagers had been marked as wanted or necessary, and by a process of elimination, which of them remained to be purged. Alex scanned the group and their families around the giant half-circle of the amphitheatre. He knew some of them, not all. Alex's mind wandered as the High Priest Justine announced first the names of the wanteds, and he startled only slightly as the High Priest spoke Aaron's name. Aaron, who'd had nothing to worry about, sighed anyway in relief when he was among the 15 names called. The necessaries were next. 13 names were read. Alexander Stowe was not one of those either. Even though Alex knew that he was unwanted, and had known ever since his parents had told him over breakfast when he was 10, the knowledge and 3 years of preparation weren't enough to stop the sweat that pricked his armpits now. It was down to a mere formality unless there was a surprise, which there sometimes was, but it didn't matter. Everyone stood motionless until the final 20 names were called. Among the unwanted, Alexander Stowe. Alex didn't move, though his heart fell like a cement block into his gut. He stared straight ahead, as he'd seen the other unwanteds do in past years. His lip quivered for a moment, but he fought to still it. When the governors came over to him, he put his arms out for them to shackle with rusty iron bands. He made his eyes icy cool before he glanced over his shoulder at his parents, who remained unemotional. His father nodded slightly, and finally took his finger out of Alex's back after the shackles were secure. That was a minor relief, but what did it matter now? Aaron sniffed once quietly, catching Alex's attention in the silent amphitheatre. The identical boys held a glance for a moment. Something, like a jolt of energy, passed between them, and then it was gone.
"Goodbye," Aaron whispered.
Alex swallowed hard, held the stare a second more as the governors tugged at him to follow, and then broke the connection and went with the governors to the waiting bus that would take him to his death. Wanted. Aaron Stowe, the wanted, watched his brother Alex board the rusty box of a bus, and then he turned his eyes to the formidable High Priest, Justine. She retreated to her aging jeep-like vehicle, flanked by two guards and her secretary, and they began the drive back up the dusty hill to the palace, leaving a trail of grey smoke and a sharp odour to linger in the heavy air. The rest of Quill slowly dispersed on foot. Murmurs surfaced and drifted through the crowd. Not about the purge, of course. That was already a cloudy memory for some. Instead, they spoke of their plans for the rest of the day, for the day of the purge was Quill's one holiday each year. All of the wanteds, and most of the necessaries, except those who tended to the farm animals, were free to do as they pleased for the rest of it. Aaron knew what he would be doing. He turned to his mother and father and said with a decisive air, "All set, then?" Mrs. Stowe nodded primly, and the three of them followed the crowd down the dusty path that led to Quadrant 4, where they lived.
"We'll finish making your uniform and get your things packed for university," she said. "Cut your hair, too."
She looked at Mr. Stowe and asked,
"I don't suppose we'll get the unwanted boy's clothes and shoes back, will we?"
Mr. Stowe, who had once been quite handsome but now had curled up a bit from years of back-breaking work as a berrier, shook his head. "No."
"Well, that's a waste. Aaron could use them. The shoes, at least. Wish I'd thought to take them before he left."
"I wouldn't want to wear them," Aaron said, and then he pinched his lips together before he said more. Still, his mother narrowed her eyes and spoke softly, almost fearfully.
"He'll do well to forget about him."
Aaron kept silent for a moment, thinking.
"You're right," he said finally. "It won't happen again."
"See to it," said Mr. Stowe.
After 15 minutes they had reached Quadrant 4, a residential square mile of tiny identical houses planted closely together like rows of sweet corn, each house the colour of the dry, cracked desert that surrounded it. The crowd of people split up now and weaved their way between the structures until they reached their own individual homes. Aaron and his parents nodded politely to their neighbours as they walked along. When Aaron saw a familiar couple around the same age as his parents walking alone, he touched his mother's sleeve.
"How odd," he said. "Isn't Mr. Ranger a milker?"
"Yes,"
she said.
"Why is he out and about instead of doing his job?" Aaron's eyes narrowed.
"He must have been given the day off this year because of the unwanted daughter. Did they know in advance, I wonder?"
She turned to Mr. Stowe.
"Not that I heard." "That's a blow," Mr. Stowe said.
He yawned as they neared their house, number 54-43.
"They'll be cut off from reproducing now. This was their second offence."
Mr. Stowe wrinkled his nose.
"They'll be completely ridiculed by the wanteds for poor production."
Mrs. Stowe gave her husband a disapproving glance.
"You'll be careful what you say," she snapped. "Lest you forget, we've a wanted in our presence now."
Aaron raised his chin slightly as his parents stood aside at the front door, allowing the boy to enter before them for the first time.
"Yes, be careful, father," Aaron said coolly. "Or I'll have to report your insubordination for a comment like that."
Aaron took a dignified stride as he made his way through the tiny kitchen to the even tinier bedroom that he no longer had to share.
"It's true," he thought. "Enough mourning. Alex has likely been eliminated by now."
The twinge in his gut was soon dulled by thoughts of his now secured future and a tiny surge of power. He was Aaron Stowe, the wanted. And he had a lot more to prove than most, having been born of two necessaries. Not to mention overcoming the stigma of a worthless twin brother. It was, Aaron knew, a huge accomplishment to have made it to the top like this. He began to pack his suitcase, a satisfied feeling growing inside him, for tonight would be his last night living with his necessary parents. Tomorrow he would go to university to be with the others of his elevated status. The Death Farm. No one spoke during the 15-minute bus ride to the Death Farm. It was stiflingly hot. Flies buzzed and darted at the closed windows, unable to escape. When Alex pulled out of his deep daze, he wiped the sweat off his forehead with his upper arm and looked around the bus. In front of Alex, connected to him by a long chain over the high-backed bus seat, was his neighbor and friend, Megan Ranger. It was a bit of a shock to see her in this group. She'd had only one infraction, as far as he knew, but it was a double. Singing and dancing. Alex had witnessed it, but it wasn't he who had reported her. She'd had a pretty voice, too, but Alex was not permitted to think about that. Despite the heat, Megan's face was white as the moon. Across the bus aisle was Samhede Birkesh, who was well known to Alex but not necessarily well liked by him. Alex was surprised to see him here, too, since the boy had privately boasted to Alex and Aaron only last week that he was going to be in the Quillitory. Samhede was obviously fighting tears and glared furiously when Alex's eyes landed on him.
"What are you looking at?" Samhede said.
But one of the younger governors gave Samhede a warning look. Unwanteds were not allowed to speak. Their last words had already been uttered before the purge. Alex dropped his eyes and took in a few breaths, vowing silently not to look at Samhede again until, well, ever. Instead, he turned his gaze to the seat behind his own, not having noted in the shock of it all who was attached to his other arm. He nearly had to stand in order to see over the high seat back to where the chain led, but he didn't, since the governors were watching. All he could see was the straight jet-black hair and big, watery blue eyes of someone he was sure had to be a girl. But a tiny girl for 13, he thought. She didn't turn away. Instead, she held his gaze, blinking away her tears only once during the long moment. Her eyes were deep and soulful, with wet black lashes all clumped together from crying. After a moment, Alex attempted a half-smile. He doubted that she could see his mouth if he couldn't see hers. But her eyes crinkled the tiniest bit in response, and for some reason it made Alex feel just a little bit good. There was no one else on the rickety old bus that Alex knew. He thought for a moment about being here alone with the governors, and for some selfish reason he couldn't quite explain, he felt a rush of something glad knowing Megan and the others were there with him, that he wasn't the only unwanted in the entire land of Quill. The bus chugged past the nursery where all of Quill's trees stood, past the cattle ranch on the way out of town, and along the stark, dingy, grey south wall of Quill for several minutes before the equally bland houses disappeared and the land grew untended and desolate. Alex's stomach churned when the driver braked, and the bus slowly groaned to a stop in front of the black, solid iron gates of what the people of Quill called the Death Farm. None but the High Priest, Justine, and the governors had ever been inside the gates and returned alive, and they didn't speak of it. Only the people of Quill, in hushed voices, would talk about it now and then, and speculate about how long you might be held there before the Eliminators disposed of you. And just how did they do it? Was it painful? Did they sedate you before tossing you into the great lake of boiling oil? Alex tried hard not to think of these things, but the harder he tried, the more he thought of them. And so it was almost with relief that he heard the bus door creak open, and the governors tell all of the unwanteds to stand and disembark. There was a distinct smell, pungent, when the children walked off the bus and gathered along the black gate that led to the farm. It was an uncommon odour, different from the fried smells that came from the Quillitory vehicles. Alex assumed it was burning oil wafting off the nearby lake. He had never been this close to it before, since no one was allowed near it. No one could even see the lake, because the towering cement block walls that surrounded the land reached all the way up to the barbed wire ceiling 40 feet above. No one, that is, except the unwanteds. Alex glanced at the black-haired, blue-eyed girl next to him. The protective barbed wire ceiling that crisscrossed and covered the entire land of Quill made a shadow box on her face, capturing a tear. She shook silently. She was not 13, Alex decided. In a brave moment, with nothing to lose, he whispered, "I'm Alex. It'll go quickly." He wasn't sure why he said that. It was the only comforting thing he could think of. She blinked and turned her face up at him, making the shadow boxes race across her face like they did across everything, everywhere.
"Lani,"
she whispered back, and shook her head.
"And no, it won't."
Alex didn't know what to say. He stood at attention as a governor took a key from a string around her neck and unlocked the gate.
"Summon the Eliminators," the woman said.
Another governor obliged by pounding on the gate. When the enormous gate creaked open, the governors stepped away and began boarding the bus again. Lani watched them go, tears streaming down her face.
"Goodbye, father,"
she said, as a slight grey-haired man boarded. The senior governor paused in the doorway for a split second and then, perhaps heavily, continued up the steps without looking back. He took a seat on the opposite side of the bus. Lani turned away and roughly whisked the tears from her cheeks. The bus drove off as the giant black iron door to the death farm widened enough for the chained children to enter single file. Inside were four enormous eliminators, robed in black. Their heads were covered in cloth, but their beady red eyes pierced into the already frightened souls of the children. Lani now appeared to be the only calm one. She held her head high as the long chain of children walked inside.
"What are they?"
Megan gasped, and reached awkwardly for Alex's hand. Alex grasped Megan's hand and gave it a frightened squeeze.
"I don't know," he whispered.
He felt like his chest was going to collapse. Breathing in and out slowly, Alex closed his eyes for a moment and shivered as the gate groaned and closed with a loud clang, the lock clicking automatically on the other side, separating them from Quill forever. The Eliminators took the ends of the chains and trudged slowly, the children following. They were in a small cement yard. A grey stone building stood before them, and a steaming black lake boiled beyond it. Alex shuddered.
"That's where they'll do it to us."
The oily stench seemed to grow stronger as they shuffled across broken cement, past bundles of burned-looking weeds, toward the building. It was more desolate than the most wasted section of Quill. Even the sky was clouded and grey here, although there was no barbed wire, just open sky. None of them had ever seen an uninterrupted sky before. Everything was eerily silent, but for the clanking of the chains and the scuffle of shoes, as the Unwanteds moved forward. The seconds felt like hours. When the Eliminators stopped walking and turned their eyes to the sky, Alex followed their gaze. The other children looked up too. From the sky over the boiling black lake, a large bird, or something, slowly approached. The Eliminators seemed to be waiting for it, and they stood, huge, hulking, silent, as a four-legged, winged creature landed with an ominous thud directly in front of them. Elimination. The creature was an extraordinarily beautiful, yet frightening, tortoise, with long wings that were covered with glistening white feathers tipped in black. The mosaic-shelled beast stood on all four legs, stretching out its neck to view its audience, and even on all fours, was more than half as tall as the smallest child, Lani. The spectacular creature bobbed its head to the Eliminators, and then it looked each Unwanted in the eye. In turn, each dropped his gaze and instinctively drew back as far as his chains would allow. After a few moments, the tortoise appeared satisfied. When it spoke, to the utter shock of the children, it was in a deep, agonizingly slow voice.
"Welcome,"
the tortoise said, low and grim, and the word caused a chill to run up Alex's spine.
"We've been,"
it paused for a breath,
"expecting you."
Samhede,
The glaring boy from the bus, who had been silent all this time, muttered an oath under his breath and raised his fists, ready to fight. But Alex and the others were fearfully mesmerized by the odd creature that stood before them. What was this thing? Was it going to attack? What did it have to do with this decrepit farm that contained nothing but the smell of death? They watched the tortoise, almost afraid to look at its grim face, but not quite able to look away either. The tortoise blinked a long, slow blink. Craning its long neck to look behind it, it lifted its round front leg and held it next to its mouth, as if to cup its words.
"Marcus," it called out in its slow, grim voice. "It's time."
What in the name of Quill is it doing? Alex wondered. A moment later, a tall, thin figure emerged from the grey building and lifted his hand. All at once, Alex felt dizzy, as the space around him seemed to swirl, the oily lake whirling with the grey building and the wall behind them until everything was a spinning charcoal haze. He blinked rapidly and wondered if he and all the children had already been eliminated, if it was over. Nothing on his body hurt, yet the charcoal blur of everything around him now faded, softened, cooled to white, and then grew steadily brighter, nearly blinding him. This was nothing at all like what Alex expected to feel when immersed in the great lake of boiling oil. Megan, who could not help herself, cried out, "What's happening?" Alex squeezed her fingers, more to assure himself than her that they were still together. He sucked in a breath but couldn't answer. Another moment later, the white melted and colour emerged. The small, desolate lot had transformed into a huge world so full of colour Alex could hardly see. The sun shone in a cerulean sky. The cement turned to a lush carpet of grass, and water fountains emerged from the earth. A thousand trees sprouted and grew to full height, scattered far and wide. The boiling lake softened into a calm sea of blues and greens, and the single grey building expanded into an enormous, sprawling fieldstone mansion. The gnarled weeds at the children's feet wavered and transformed into wide-eyed animals, both common and fantastic. Even the eliminators transformed. Their black cloth coverings disappeared, and all four grew even taller, with animal-like heads and sleek, long necks that melded into huge, stout, strong bodies like the Unwanteds had never seen. The newly transformed eliminators were covered in a fine layer of shimmering black hair that reflected the sunlight, and their previously frightening red eyes grew kind and intelligent, a rich amber brown. As the Unwanteds gawked, the shackles on their arms unbuckled and fell to the ground. They took in a collective, awed breath, rubbed their sore wrists, and checked to see if the others were all still there. The tall, thin figure that had emerged from the grey building, now mansion, was a man dressed in a flowing, multicoloured robe. He strolled toward them. A fluffy shock of white hair stood up on his head, as if he had just been struck by lightning.
"Greetings, friends," said the man. His voice, warm and clear, pealed like a pleasant-sounding bell. He opened his arms wide. "I am Marcus Today. Welcome to Artemis."
He paused, touching a finger to his lips, and then he smiled brightly.
"Tell me, children, how does it feel to be eliminated?"
Mr. Today.
It was as if Alex and the others were mute, and indeed the colours of this magical place alone would have been enough to shock any Quillan, for Quill was a bland world whose brightest colour was the green of the leafy trees in the nursery. In Quill, all the trees were confined to one place, so that no one would get notions about introducing such a bright colour into the housing quadrants. But here in Artemis, all of the colours felt warm, from the deep, foresty greens of plants to the soothing blues of the sky and sea. The strand of beach was not a dingy grey like the cement walls around Quill. It was clean and white, with tiny bits of silver and gold sparkling in the sunshine. A cool breeze whisked away the odour of burning oil from the children's noses and replaced it with the musky fragrance of the sea and the woods. The children breathed the wonderful scent, hesitating at first at its strangeness, and then nearly gulping it in, for several of them had been holding their breath for quite some time. Not one of the unwanteds could even look around and ask, "Is this a joke?" Because Quill was a serious place, and it was doubtful that any of the 20 even thought a joke possible. Most likely 19 of them had never known the word joke, and the one that had known it most surely had been reported to the governors and thus ended up here. Whatever here was, if not the death farm. Puzzled, Alex and the others could only stare at this man so brightly adorned. And some were frightened, perhaps, not of Mr. Today himself, but rather for him, since his smile was so animated, his delight so obvious, that it surely meant he would be reported to the governors and sent to the... well, sent to here. But beyond all of that was the pure shock of seeing a winged tortoise, which at the moment sported a droll smile. The transformation of the land and lake, so inviting that in a different situation one might entertain a thought of a swim on such a warm day, even though such imaginative thoughts were not allowed, and the... what would the Eliminators be called? No one had ever seen a creature like them. Whatever they were, their deep, heavy breaths made up the bulk of the noise for the moment. It was all so stunning that it was almost... nearly, but not quite, uncomfortable. And so the unwanteds stood blinking, and the man called Mr. Today stood smiling, and the Eliminators stood panting, and the winged tortoise stood drolling, all of them in a sort of lumpy circle. When they began to walk about the property, Mr. Today pointed out little fanciful combinations of creatures, rabbitkins and beavops, and squirrelicorns, and owlbats, which hopped about the grounds looking for a snack, or strolled down footpaths together, deep in conversation, or hung upside down from trees, twisting their necks about this way and that. Soon a queue of humans and creatures streamed from the mansion, and appeared to go about business as usual, which was all the more shocking. For a child of Quill, who might have been sent to his death for merely drawing something completely ordinary with a twig in the dirt, like a square, perhaps, or, good heavens, a rhombus. The shock of it all felt a little bit like a form of torture. And truly more than half of the unwanteds thought, "We are all still about to die." The tortoise cleared its throat and spoke to Mr. Today.
"You may," it said slowly, "remember, Marcus, what happens."
It yawned.
"Every year."
Mr. Today, who had been gazing and smiling and taking in the sights of these new and wonderful people, watching their faces and eyes, and noticing if they had long fingers or short ones, and taking note of how each one stood exactly so, startled when the tortoise spoke. And he jumped, quite, making everyone else just that much more edgy.
"Good heavens, Jim, you're right!" Mr. Today stood up quite tall and announced in somewhat of a rushed voice, "Jim is correct, children. I generally forget from year to year what a terribly shocking experience this is for the unwanteds. And let me assure you before you follow me around all day, this happened last year and I'll never forgive myself. Those poor sweet children agonized half the morning. That this is not a sort of torture before I eliminate you ordeal, this world and the shock of it. What I've done here, you see, is, well," he gave a small smile, "I've saved you. That is, if you want saving."
His audience stared.
"Let me ask you this," the man continued, more slowly, trying to rein in his excitement for the sake of the bewildered unwanteds. "Does anyone wish to be eliminated right now?"
Mr. Today waited politely for 10 seconds or so to see if there were volunteers. When he saw there were none, he nodded and smiled as the children uttered short gasps of acknowledgement to each other at the realization of their new fate,
such as "We're saved," and "Wow," and "Unreal."
Mr. Today remained still and smiling until they were quite finished, and then he said,
"Oh, splendid! Well then, let's have a tour."
Mr. Today dismissed the hefty, long-necked eliminators. The Gyrinos, he called them, with a kindly, "Thank you, Aria, ladies." And the four Gyrinos responded pleasantly, in melodious voices, "Pleasure, Marcus dear," before lumbering back to the gate to stand guard. Meanwhile, Jim lifted a front leg in salute, turned away from the circle, broke into a staggering walk for momentum, and flapped his wings mightily. Slowly, very, very slowly, he ascended, and flew over the property this time, narrowly shaving the top of a particularly tall tree on the lawn, toward what looked to be a jungle in the far-off distance, just beyond the edge of the grass. Mr. Today turned back to the children, who had moved very little all this time, and beckoned with his hand.
"Walk with me," he urged,
and with that he strode sprightly across the lawn, pointing out the flowers and various creatures like a tour guide, and pretending there was nothing at all unusual about 20 seemingly mute children stumbling after him. Quill prevails when the strong survive. After the purge, the high priest, Justine, gazed pointedly out the window of the ancient quillitory jalopy in which she rode. Next to her sat the secretary to the high priest, a prune of a woman who had served the land of Quill since Justine had become ruler 50 years before. While the secretary was not a forgetful woman, she had somehow managed to disremember her own name decades ago, and no one else could recall it either. Now she simply answered to secretary. Normally, the high priest Justine was accompanied by at least one governor as well, but on the day of the purge all of the governors were busy delivering the unwanteds to their deaths, and so it was just the two women in the back seat of the vehicle today.
"Secretary," Justine said evenly, "I've decided that this will be your last year."
Secretary stared straight ahead at the back of the driver's head. She nodded slowly. The high priest continued,
"I'll choose your successor from the university. You'll train him as your assistant. When he's ready, we'll send you on to the ancient sector to be put to sleep."
"Quill prevails when the strong survive," murmured Secretary.
Her voice showed no emotion. It was a matter of usefulness, of course. Until this year, when Secretary's eyesight had begun to grow fuzzy, there would have been no reason to eliminate her, though recently she seemed to be moving a little more slowly, too. Her time had come. And the last thing Secretary wanted was to bring shame to the High Priest Justine, or the land of Quill, for not emanating perfect strength. Secretary nodded her head slowly, and watched the dizzying blur of checkerboard shadows that rushed over the vehicle from the barbed wire overhead. The shadows did not make her feel secure today. When they arrived at the palace, the High Priest Justine and Secretary made their way to the dining room for the annual steak luncheon feast, this year celebrating the largest purge of unwanteds Quill had ever seen. A moment later, Quillitory General Blair arrived, greeted the High Priest, and took his place at the far end of the table. The three waited in silence until the governors returned from the death farm. Justine's eyes gleamed when finally they appeared.
"Greetings, governors! The unwanted have been disposed of, I presume?" she asked, as the palace servants served the meal.
Senior Governor Haluki nodded curtly and handed the death farm's gate key to the High Priest, Justine.
"It's done," he said. He was one of two middle-aged governors. The other four were young and fairly new to their posts over the past 5 years, all recent graduates from Wanted University. They had replaced Justine's elderly governors, who'd had to be put to sleep once they'd lost their edge. The High Priest nodded to Haluki, satisfied.
"A record year," she said.
She became preoccupied with working her dull knife like a saw across the steak. After an unsuccessful bout, she glanced up.
It was the first year that the unwanteds outnumbered our wanteds.
Haluki grunted as he attacked his steak.
Even so, we've been too lenient in past years, he said gruffly. Quill feels richer without them already.
Indeed it does, quite right,
Justine muttered, still struggling with the steak. Finally, frustrated, she slammed the knife on the table.
Cook!
She bellowed to the empty doorway, and then she turned to the senior governor.
Great land of Quill, Haluki! Find me a university student who can solve the beef problem, will you? This steak is nowhere near first rate.
Of course, Haluki said, nodding to young Governor Strang, who made a mental note of the assignment.
At the High Priest's call, the palace cook rushed into the dining room and bowed deeply. His body trembled, though his face was dull and lifeless. Justine glared at the cook.
Clean up the kitchen. When you are finished, find me a replacement cook, one who actually knows something about cooking, to serve in your stead.
The cook's eyes grew wide.
But the meat, he began.
Silence, Justine hissed.
By dusk I want you to make your way to the ancient's home. You have outlived your usefulness. How you made it past me when you were 13, I know not. You should have been an unwanted.
Yes, High Priest Justine, whispered the cook.
His face was now struck with the realization that he would die that night. He knew better than to ask if he could stop at his house in Quadrant 3 to say goodbye to his wife. Justine dismissed the cook with a wave, and he disappeared.
Haluki, Justine continued, you are right. I've been far too lenient, letting some slip by as necessaries when they should have been eliminated. From now on, one reported infraction is one too many. There should be no room for mistakes in Quill.
Loud cheers echoed all the way down the table to General Blair, who shouted, Quill prevails when the strong survive. Five governors echoed the sentiment. Senior Governor Haluki, gnawing wildly at his steak bone, eyed the elderly High Priest.
Hear, hear, he said.
Artime. It took a good deal of the afternoon for the children to thaw. Alex had a small headache, but it seemed to go away once a group of teenagers, who were slightly older-looking than the group of unwanteds, delivered to them a delicious picnic supper on the lawn by the shore. As the children ate, the teenagers formed two rows facing them. A rousing but pleasant noise burst from the nearby bushes, and the group stated words of welcome in a most peculiar way. The tops of nearby trees seemed to swish in the breeze like pom-poms. The unwanteds had no idea what it all was, as they had never seen nor heard anything like it ever before. Alex could guess, though, since he had witnessed Megan's very serious infraction, that what the teenagers were doing was called singing. And though the noise was very fast and loud, it was exciting, and it sounded good to his ears. He looked at Megan, concerned, knowing how wrong this sort of thing was. But Megan was enraptured by the performers and didn't notice. When the song ended, the choir bowed politely while Mr. Today applauded loudly.
"Clap for them," he said to the new unwanteds. "Like this, hands together, applause. It tells them that you liked it," he explained as the choir dissipated. "You did like it, didn't you? Megan, I'll bet you did."
Megan's eyes grew wide. She glanced in each direction uneasily, perhaps out of habit, and cleared her throat.
"Yes, very much, sir."
And then, when Mr. Today chuckled merrily, she added,
"Thank you,"
and tried to smile. He nodded encouragingly to her, and to all the children, and then his face grew sober.
"You may express your feelings and say what you are thinking here in Artime," he said in a soft voice. "It will be hard at first, but you are safe to speak your mind, all of you."
His eyes grew misty for a moment, and then he clasped his hands in his lap.
"There are some things we should talk about," he said.
Everyone stopped what they were doing, and all eyes focused on Mr. Today, who continued, "You already know that your parents and the government of Quill believe you to be eliminated by now.
You know they are not mourning for you. They're doing what they do every day, which is to work to build Quill into a place of extreme power and super intelligence. You, dear children, are what they call creative, imaginative. The government, and especially High Priest Justine, wants to eliminate creative thinkers like you. They see creativity as a weakness. After all, it could lead to something horrible, like magic. He afforded a small smile, picked a flower, and handed it to Megan. She hesitated, and then took it, and in her hand it turned into a small silver music box. Megan jumped and sucked in a startled breath. "Music," Mr. Today said. "When you wind the little key, the music box will play a song. Sometimes you'll hear a song with voices saying something, like we just witnessed here a moment ago." Megan nodded. "Singing," she said. She turned the key tentatively, and a few wondrous notes sprang from the box. She startled, and then her shock melted into a grin. "Indeed," Mr. Today replied, peering at the others to see if they understood. "Singing and dancing, painting, sculpting, telling wild tales," he said, glancing at Lani, who blushed. "Theater, playing instruments, writing stories and poems," he continued, glancing at various others at each word. "That is what you are now free to do." He noticed their puzzled looks. "Ah, but I'm getting ahead of myself." He paused and tapped a finger on his lips as if he were thinking carefully. "I have two very serious requests. Because of your creative minds, you have been eliminated, or so think the people of Quill. My first request is this. Please consider the ramifications if you ever decide you want to go back to Quill." The group of children blinked, hanging on to every word. "If you ever go back, if you ever contact anyone there in any way, your parents or your siblings," he said, glancing at Alex, "the governors or anyone, you risk exposing us all. You take the lives of everyone here in Artime into your own hands. If discovered, this place and everyone in it will be destroyed." Alex shivered, even though the day was still warm. He thought about his twin brother Aaron, and felt a sharp pain run through him, as if half of his own body had been severed from the rest. But he knew that Mr. Today was right, and there was no way he would jeopardize the life of the man who had saved him, or the lives of the others here. Alex nodded very seriously along with the rest of the group. But part of Alex wished that Aaron could have shared in this good fortune. "My second request," Mr. Today said, "is this. Please take the classes I offer. Train with my warriors and learn how to fight. Because if the High Priest Justine, the governors, or the Quillatory does discover that you have not been eliminated," he paused, letting the words sink in, "they will kill me for deceiving them, and then they will kill you once and for all. And if that happens, Artime will disappear." Samhede, who had been silent ever since his whispered oath, now stiffened. "Fight against the Quillatory?" he sneered. "Impossible." Mr. Today cocked his head. "Ah, Samhede," he said. "The realm of possibility here in Artime is only limited by our imaginations. You'll get used to it after a time. But you seem quite disturbed, my friend. Why is it that you think fighting is impossible?"
"Look at us!"
Samhede waved his hand around at the group. He stopped and pointed at Alex, glaring.
"In case you don't know, we're the rejects from Quill. We're not strong or intelligent. We're not capable of fighting. We're worthless. And you think we stand a chance against the Quillatory?"
Samhede rose to his feet.
"What you have here is all really impressive, Mr. Today, but come on. You don't seem to have any soldiers except for that group of oversized animals at the gate. No tanks, no weapons. They'll destroy us in about 1 minute."
Alex shifted uncomfortably and looked down. The small smile on Mr. Today's face remained hidden by his hand as he stroked his chin and grew thoughtful. He said, almost as if he expected Samhede to say more. And the boy did.
This place is ridiculous. I'm not taking your stupid classes.
At the word stupid, and all the words around it, the other children's eyes widened in fear. In Quill, an outburst like this was against the law, and a most egregious infraction that would seal a child's fate with no exception.
"It's not stupid,"
Lani burst out without meaning to. She clapped her hand over her mouth. Alex, feeling both a bit protective of Lani and a bit miffed at Samhede for always glaring at him, shifted on the picnic blanket in case he had to do something, although he had no idea what something might be, and shot a look of support at Lani. Samhede laughed sarcastically.
"Not for a baby, maybe."
He looked Mr. Today in the eye and said,
"I think you are a complete lunatic."
And then, as if he knew where he was going, he stalked off down the lawn to the seashore and kept walking along its edge. The Unwanteds watched, stunned. Every one of the children knew that people in Quill were not allowed to argue or become angry with other Quillans. They were taught to bank their rage and keep it somewhere deep inside, so that in case of attack they would, with one unified surge, pour the rage out upon the heads of their enemies. Of course, Quill had quite a lot of rage saved up, since there had been no sign of enemies in the entire 50 years of High Priest Justine's reign. Yet the government instilled much fear into the people about evil foreign lands beyond the protective walls of Quill, unimaginable places like the Great Desert and the Dark Forest, as if an attack were imminent. And who were the people of Quill to question the rulers who had kept them safe all this time? But here in Artime, nothing was as the Unwanteds expected. The other children began chattering, shocked at Samhede's actions and words.
"What is he doing? Is he allowed to go off like that? Isn't someone going to stop him? Why does he have to be so mean?"
This last one from Lani, who felt wounded, having just been called a baby. Samhede's outburst was foreign to the Unwanteds, and they watched Mr. Today, waiting for him to punish Samhede for the infraction. But to their great puzzlement, Mr. Today did nothing. As the old man watched the children react to the scene, it was hard for him to hide the mirth that crinkled around his eyes.
"Bravo! Bravo, my dear boy!" he called in the direction of Samhede. "That's the way!"
"Perfect," he thought. "Even better than he had hoped for the first day."
He put his hands together and began clapping and shouting. Samhede flung up his hand in disgust and continued walking. The others, startled, had no idea what to think. But after a moment, Megan began to clap, too, for there was something inside her churning mind that just about but not quite understood why. Soon Alex joined in, as if he almost understood it too, and a curious look passed between Megan and him, one that made them both want to laugh out loud. Home in the Stone Mansion. It was near dusk when the Unwanteds followed Mr. Today toward the mansion. Samhede had not rejoined them. Some of the children murmured their concerns. Mr. Today smiled. "He'll be fine. There's no need to worry. He needs to think and walk, and that is a good thing for a strong, angry fighter like him."
"But what if he gets lost?"
Lani asked, feeling quite comfortable in her new surroundings already. And though she was curious, she didn't particularly care whether the sullen Samhede ever returned.
"He can't get lost," Mr. Today assured the children. "I've put the scroll feature into effect. Once he reaches the end of Artime, just beyond the mansion, he'll slip through and come out the opposite side, at the edge of the jungle where it meets the shore. He'll simply need to walk a bit farther to get back to where he started."
Alex gave Mr. Today a quizzical look.
"Scroll feature? So there is no jungle? It's just a...
He struggled for the word.
"A picture. More like a giant window at the moment, actually. And yes, the jungle is really there. Good heavens, where would all the animals go if it weren't? You just can't get to it at the moment."
His eyes twinkled. "But when you are all sure of me, and I am sure of you, and I know you have found your bearings quite satisfactorily, I'll remove the giant window and the scroll feature, and you'll find that the jungle is quite lovely."
The old man paused thoughtfully. Though it can be frightening and dangerous. Lots of fascinating things to see there, too. But that's for another day. Alex didn't understand, but he nodded anyway, and soon they reached the walkway to the mansion. As they drew near, a pleasant-sounding noise could be heard coming from the shrubs. "Music in the bushes," Mr. Today said. He climbed the steps. "This is our home. You may come and go as you please, and even stay out all night if you wish." Lani's eyes opened wide. That's a bit of a shock, she thought. But what so far this day wasn't? The old magician then opened the enormous wooden door to the mansion and walked inside, the children following. Before them was a stunning, massive marble entryway, flanked by two statues standing upright on pedestals. The pedestals alone were as tall as Alex, and the statues on top of them reached 25 feet off the floor, yet they nowhere nearly approached the ceiling. On the left stood a towering winged cheetah, made of sand-coloured stone, with sharp ivory teeth, thicker and longer than the children's fingers. He stood poised to attack, reared up on his hind legs, his wings widespread, frozen in mid-flap. On the right, carved from ebony, was an enormous sleek woman with long, flowing hair and bulging muscles, a quiver of arrows and a bow slung over her shoulder. Mr. Today looked up. "Hello, Simba. Good evening, Florence," he said. The statues nodded stiffly. "There ought to be one more boy coming along presently, so be aware. Probably shouldn't eat him, all right, Simba?" The winged cheetah purr-growled in response and fluidly lowered himself to all fours on the pedestal, his huge paws with gleaming claws hanging off the edge within inches of Alex's face. Slowly the boy slid away from the stony beast.
"Wow,"
Lani breathed, and the others followed her gaze from the statues to the rest of the great foyer. Beyond the entrance, the marble hall led to an extremely wide marble staircase, whose steps split halfway up and wound around to meet again in an incredible expanse of balcony. They could see several hallways branching off the overlook. The children's voices grew loud as they exclaimed or noted things to each other about the mansion from their viewpoint in the entryway. Mr. Today strolled past the staircase. "We'll visit up there in a moment," he said. Instead, he led the children behind the staircase to a hallway and showed them past several doors, classrooms, he said, and to the back of the mansion, to a kitchen the size of 6 quill houses put together. At a long counter bar off to the left sat a 12 or 15 older teenagers, all laughing and snacking on popcorn and sodas, as a brilliant pink ball of fluff with webbed feet did a dance for them along the countertop. Some of the people sitting there turned to look curiously at the children standing with Mr. Today. A few waved hello. Alex recognized one, just barely remembering her as one of last year's unwanteds. How strange, he thought, and his mind began to turn.
"How many unwanteds live here, actually?" he asked.
Mr. Today hummed, tapping his lips with his forefinger. "Perhaps 500. I lost count years ago."
500, Megan said. "Where is everyone?"
"Oh, they're around, here and there," he said. "Some are in evening classes, some practicing their art, some relaxing in the lounge, some in their rooms. You saw a few of them strolling about on the lawn, didn't you?" Lani tapped Mr. Today's shoulder, which made him chuckle and give her his utmost attention.
"Mr. Today," she said somberly, "did all the unwanteds over the years decide not to be eliminated? Are they all here?"
Megan gave Alex a wildish sort of look and gripped his arm, and he remembered that she had an older brother who had been eliminated 5 years before. Alex nodded sharply, knowing what Megan seemed speechless to say, and the burning question rushed from his lips before he could stop it.
"Yes, Mr. Today, how many years?"
His face grew pale as he thought about all the unwanteds that had been purged from Quill since he was a boy. His mind raced, trying to remember them, but it was difficult, since Quillens had all been instructed to forget them. Mr. Today smiled, but there was a hint of sorrow in his eyes.
"Dear people, how could I forget? Yes, all the unwanteds, as far back as you can remember, I hear."
He looked at Megan, and his dark eyes danced again. "Megan, your brother, Sean, is so excited to see you. He'd like you to meet him in the lounge at 8 o'clock. Megan squeaked in shock.
"He's here?"
She trailed off and gripped Alex's arm so hard it hurt him. "Which reminds me," said Mr. Today, "I'd better show you the upstairs so you can get ready."
"Where do you suppose the lounge is?"
Megan whispered to Alex. Mr. Today, though apparently forgetful in his old age, did not have a hearing problem. He chuckled. "You'll find instructions in your room that will tell you how to take the tube to the lounge, Megan. Never fear, never fear." The magician chuckled again and rubbed his hands together, so excited to see the unwanteds feeling a bit more comfortable as the day wore on.
"Tube?"
Megan whispered, softer now in Alex's ear. Alex shrugged, his eyes wide in wonder.
"I have no idea."
There were several doors that led from the kitchen. Mr. Today pointed at one as they walked through the huge room and said, "Help yourself to anything in that pantry whenever you get hungry for a snack, either by coming down here or ordering up. The official meal times are posted on the blackboards in your rooms."
"Snacks? Whenever we want?"
whispered a rather thin boy at the back of the group.
"Amazing. Where does everyone sit?"
Lani asked. "Oh, we always have room. You'll see," he said mysteriously. Mr. Today led them down another hallway and pointed out an enormous dining room, and soon they were back to the entryway and the base of the staircase. Alex saw that Simba had once again risen to his hind quarters.
"Marcus," Simba said in his purr-growl voice, "I believe the young man has arrived."
"What excellent timing," Mr. Today said. "Thank you, Sim. Wait here one moment for me, children." He went to the giant door and opened it. On the step sat Samhede, his broad shoulders curled over and his chin in his hands. Mr. Today sat next to him and the two exchanged a few quiet words. Alex leaned down and whispered to Lani and Megan, "Where do you suppose the other statue went?" For now the warrior woman had disappeared. Lani giggled.
"Perhaps she needed a snack from the pantry.
Or maybe a nap."
Megan, who was nearly shivering in anticipation of seeing her brother, laughed a strange, high-pitched laugh, and hiccuped. Mr. Today and Samhede joined the others, and they ascended the magnificent staircase, Samhede still wearing a mildly sullen look on his face. Lani and several others sent suspicious glances his way, but Samhede made no further outbursts, and he stayed near the back of the group. The rest of them chattered excitedly now, wondering over things like the statues, the pictures on the walls, the music that floated about their ears, not really understanding any of it, but liking it all the same. They gathered at the center of the balcony. "That hallway there," said Mr. Today, pointing toward the rightmost wing, "is where the families live." It seemed to go on endlessly. "And this hall next to it is for the other adults." He pointed to the expanse of wall directly in front of Alex. "This one, right about here, is where the female students live. Boys, you and I can't see it, and therefore we can't enter it. But we can see the one next to it. That's the boys' hall. You girls can't see that, can you?" Megan, Lani, and the other girls exchanged surprised looks as Mr. Today continued. "And here we have a wing for the few creatures who prefer to lodge indoors, though you might notice creatures in your various halls, too. Some have roaming tendencies." He chuckled at the 20 pairs of wide eyes.
"Mr. Today,"
someone ventured from the back of the group,
"does that giant turtle have a room in the mansion?"
"No," replied the man. "Jim prefers to live in the jungle, like many of the creatures, but he's welcome here if he changes his mind, just as they all are."
"Don't you ever run out of space for everyone?"
"Never," Mr. Today said with a mysterious smile. He then turned to the group and said, "Children, please find your rooms. You'll know which one is yours as you walk along the hallway, because your door will call out a greeting to you when you come near it. Inside you'll find everything you need to be comfortable.
Once you feel quite settled, feel free to roam about the mansion at will. This is your home now.
Most of the children dispersed. The girls watched curiously as some of the boys seemed to disappear straight through the wall, and the boys watched the girls do the same. Only a few hung back. Alex, Lani, and Megan briefly talked over their plans to